Chapter 1
1933
La Habana, Cuba.
Naranja de China dulce!
The melodious cry of the orange vendor under his window woke Marcus Riley with a start. He'd been dreaming he was back in County Cork, the black and tans hot on his trail, him running as fast as his brogues would let him, down dusky copses and through scummy green bogs. Then, as in that bad movie with John Gilbert he'd just gone to see with some Cuban kailin, he'd tripped and fallen and risen again, but still the bloody English auxiliaries drew closer, and one of them fired and... He opened his eyes. He was back in Havana, in the small apartment in the heart of the old city, with the constant clamor of street vendors, laughing housewives, harried workers, and dazzled tourists. The smell of the powerful coffee brewed by his next-door neighbor had already seeped under the front door, accompanied by the sad yelping of their doggie begging for breakfast.
"Whoopin' at 'em, Marcus!"
He could still hear his father in the early morn, back when they were all in the Londonderry flats.
"You believe the world those you livin'? Off with you, my boy! Show the world what you're made of!"
Riley smiled at his recollection, eased out of bed. Throwing aside the thin bedsheet, damp with night sweat, he walked over to the window. Opening the louvers, he gazed at the many-gabled roofline of La Habana Vieja, and, beyond, the limpid vast bay shimmering like a silver platter in the morning sun.
5 years and counting, he told himself. Oh, wilderness, we're paradise, you know. Take the cash and let the credit go, he recited to himself, and went to take a shower.
An hour later, Riley stepped out of his building and into the crowded, narrow sidewalk. Tall and ginger-haired, he towered above the Cubans who hustled alongside him as he walked to the garage by Chinatown where he kept the DeSoto that had come with his job at the brewery.
"Funny job that, da," he continued with his mental dialogue,
looking at a billboard displaying his employer's stellar product, a golden glass of lager hoisted by a hooded Eskimo in a field of snow.
"Cerveza brew. Deliciosa, refrescante." Brew beer, he thought. Now, in what other country would such a name be possible? Only in Cuba, so close to America, so ignorant of the language.
On Obispo Street, Riley stepped around a lottery boy, loudly hawking El Gordo of 10,000 pesos to be drawn that coming Friday. Years later, he would think back as to how his life would have been different if the boy hadn't blocked his way, and he just kept on walking blithely down the bustling street, unaware of the presence in Havana of the man who had caused his bitter tropical exile and brought so much tragedy to his family and country. But aware of that presence Riley did become when he accidentally cast a glance inside a jewelry shop. He stopped in his tracks and peered intently through the window, uncertain he had glimpsed the right man. After all, his physical type was not uncommon among the English. On the small side, plump, rosy-cheeked, given to early baldness. But no doubt about it, it was him, Winston Churchill, with his pinstripe suit and perpetual cigar, jabbing at a jeweler who, by the looks of it, wasn't understanding his meaning. Standing next to Churchill was a taller man, of solid build and erect bearing, but also in a suit, hovering over the discussion with the blank look of the disinterested observer.
"Jesus, Mary, and Joseph," thought Riley. "I wish I had my gat with me."
A wave of revulsion swept over him, and it took all the self-control he'd learned from the beatings at Golden Bridge Children's Institution for him not to burst into the shop and strangle with his bare hands the man who'd been the ruin of Ireland. Hiding his thoughts behind a mask of composure, he stepped casually into the jewelry shop. Two long display cases on either side of the room showed rings and watches in the ornate style favored by the Cubans. At the far end, in front of a small display of fine filigreed silver chains, stood Churchill and his companion.
"Must be his bodyguard, the hillhound they called Thompson," thought Riley,
recalling the stories he'd heard of how Thompson saved Churchill's life when an IRA assassination team sprang an ambush at the Kensington Gardens in London. "He's got a gun," he thought now, noticing the bulk by Thompson's left armpit.
"Best be careful." "But what are they doing here? Can't let them know I'm Irish. Don't want to arouse suspicion."
Adopting the supercilious airs he'd seen upper-class Englishmen flaunt all his life, Riley strolled about the store with a slight sneer, as though nothing in there was to his satisfaction. Out of the corner of his eye, he noticed Churchill's walking stick, of dark mahogany with a silver handle, and how Churchill's right side was hunched over it, the man keeping himself upright by leaning on the cane.
Must have had an accident. A stroke? We should be so lucky.
Perhaps we should go somewhere else, sir, Riley overheard Thompson say to Churchill in the flat tone of the well-trained manservant.
No, no. Let me try once more, confound it. Parlez-vous français, mon bonhomme?
Said Churchill in his schoolbook French, his cheeks flushing pink as he flailed his cigar at the bewildered jeweler. The man shook his head in dismay.
Lo siento, señor. Mi hija vuelve en un minuto y con gusto le puede atender. Ella sí sabe inglés.
Churchill glanced at Thompson.
Inglés? I've heard that before. It means Englishman. See, the man does understand us. He knows whence we came.
Riley saw his cue, and before Thompson could reply, stepped in quickly between the two men.
Actually, he wants to tell you that his daughter, who speaks English, will be back presently, Mr. Churchill, said Riley in the poshest accent he could muster.
Churchill turned and sized up Riley with observant eyes of the coldest blue, as calculating as a hussar picking his next pony for the final polo chucker.
Perhaps I can be of assistance, continued Riley with a nod.
That would be fine, said Churchill. Please tell this man I'm very much interested in that silver necklace, but that I don't want him to overcharge me. I know Cubans. I fought them in 95.
Yes, Mr. Churchill, I read your memoirs, said Riley, who proceeded to tell the jeweler in fluent Castilian Spanish not only Churchill's wishes, but also that his customer was one of the top leaders of the mighty empire.
The jeweler's eyes opened wide, his mouth agog.
Coño, de verdad?
Damn, really?
Así es, mi amigo, confirmed Riley.
The jeweler, amid a torrent of praise for the many accomplishments of the English race, picked out two silver filigreed earrings from the display case matching the necklace and presented them to Churchill.
What's this?
Asked Churchill. He wants to gift you these. He says they will make a lovely present for your querida, said Riley.
Querida? What is that?
Riley hesitated. He shook his head slyly, dropped his voice almost to a whisper.
Your lover, sir.
Churchill harumphed, then chuckled.
Well, my wife will certainly be amused by that description. It's been a while since... never mind. Thank him for me. The price?
The jeweler glanced at a sticker on the bottom of the velvet case holding the necklace, made a quick mental calculation.
$15, Riley told Churchill. That's for all the items. He says it's his own wholesale price.
Very decent of him.
But he would like your autograph, sir.
That can be arranged.
Later, back on the steamy sidewalk outside the jeweler's, Churchill faced Riley, shook his hand.
Say, good man, what is your name?
Riley was momentarily taken aback. When he'd entered the store, his objective had been to get as close as possible to Churchill, but in the heat of the moment he had forgotten to prepare a false identity for his charade. He blinked twice, bowed slightly before the shorter man, a gesture of subservience he knew an inflated ego like Churchill's would expect, and offered the first name that came to mind that wasn't obviously Irish.
Patrick Whitsett, Mr. Churchill, he said,
borrowing the identity of a Canadian at the brewery, confident the man had never set foot in Churchill's rarefied circles. If there's anything else I can do for you during your stay in Cuba, it would be my pleasure.
You live here?
Asked Churchill, cocking the still strong but fleshy head. I'm the operations manager at a local brewery, sir.
Locals much appreciate our product.
Not as much as I do your help today, young man. We're having a small reception at the embassy tomorrow night. I would like you to be there. Not too many of our countrymen around these parts. Nothing fancy, you understand, just your usual dinner dress.
It will be my pleasure, Mr. Churchill.
Good. How long have you been here, you say?
A few years, sir. Left England after the general strike of 26.
Yes, nasty business that. Well, we must be off. I'm still recuperating from a small accident in New York. Can't walk around too much. I need regular naps. Doctor's orders. Though, mind you, I've never needed much excuse to take siesta. It clears the mind wonderfully. Good day, he added, vigorously shaking Riley's hand again.
Before you go, Mr. Whitsett, interrupted Thompson, who had remained skeptically silent throughout the conversation, what is the name of your brewery, sir? I ask so when I order a pint I can give you my business.
Cerveza Brew. Brew beer.
Odd name, isn't it?
Brew is a not uncommon name in Spanish, from Catalonia, I'm told. Brew beer? That's a tautology if I ever heard one, said Churchill impatiently. Come along, Thompson. We need to get back to the Nacional. I've still to send those telegrams.
Yes, sir, answered Thompson, nodding goodbye at Riley. Riley dropped his ingratiating smile when he saw Churchill and Thompson turn the corner on O'Reilly Street and push their way through the crowd.
Give me my business, thought Riley.
I know exactly what you're going to do. You're going to check up on me, ain't you? I best hurry and inform Uncle Brandon that the beast is in our midst. We should kill him while we have our chance.